Valor Duharis.
And welcome back to the Faceless Men podcast covering HBO's Game of Thrones television series. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Jesse.
And we are coming to the seventh episode of Season 4, Mockingbird. This originally aired on May 18th, 2014, and we see what looks like the highest amount of viewers so far. So just barely nudging out two episodes ago, which got 7.19 million viewers, and this one has 7.2. Bounced back after Mother's Day. Looks like everybody's spending time with their moms.
Maybe watching Game of Thrones?
They weren't watching Game of Thrones, because it dropped down, you know, about 800,000.
Well, it was still around 6 million, though, wasn't it?
It was still very high. Nothing to sniff about. But yeah, so it bounces back after Mother's Day. The director, Alex Sokurov, returns from the last episode, and this episode is written by the Double Ds, Benioff and Weiss. So we have the showrunners taking the reins again. The opening sequence has no new features to it, so we'll jump right into the storyline when we start at King's Landing. And we begin with Jaime yelling at Tyrion about how he threw his life away. We saw this on the preview. If you watched the preview from last week, this scene was part of that preview.
I don't feel he threw his life away. I think he did exactly what he needed to do. I can't say taking the black at this point would not be throwing your life away.
Well, I would disagree thinking that would give him an opportunity to get the fuck out of Dodge.
Just running.
Yeah, just running. I mean, you say that he wouldn't get away, but I mean, this is a medieval culture. You can get the fuck away.
That's true. Yeah.
Of course, I don't know. There is magic too, so maybe you can't. I don't know. You know, Jamie's like, you think this is a joke? And Tyrion is like, it is a joke, just not a very funny one.
Everything's a joke to him, though.
Well, it is kind of.
To be fair, he is very true. You're either life's a joke. You're either laughing or you're crying.
But he's talking about how he fell in love with the whore because he thought the whore loved him back. So I'm still confused. I mean, I'm sure that the clue is in later as to Shay's motivation for lying on the stand. But he does make the point about how, and we discussed this when Jaime was discussing Tyrion's fate with his father, about how, you know, I was like, was this all Tyrion's plan? And no, I don't, you know, I think we finally came to the resolution that no, it probably wasn't his plan, but he's just such a great opportunist that it became his plan.
Yep.
Because it's perfect, right?
Yep.
It gets Tyrion away, and it gets Jaime back to Casterly Rock to provide heirs.
Exactly what he's looking for.
And so he's like, destroying father's best laid, you know, his best laid plans is, you know, it just gives you a nice warm and fuzzy inside.
I don't disagree.
And he also talks about how Tywin knows he's innocent, but is willing to sacrifice Tyrion, basically get what he wants. Jaime goes on, he's like, well, he's willing to sacrifice anyone. What? He's like,
yeah,
you know.
Yep.
You go get your hand cut off, you fuck your sister.
And you're still the golden boy.
And you kill a king, and you're still, you know, you're still in his good graces.
You openly reject him, and he's still willing to take you to Casterly Rock.
Right. But, and Jaime didn't take too kindly to that, though, did he? He's like, careful now, I'm the only friend you have left.
This is some hard truths, though.
It is, and speaking of hard truths, you know, Tyrion, I guess he takes solace in the fact that he got to tell him, you know, exactly what they are.
Flipping the double birds and
yeah, that's right.
Walk away.
There is a measure of peace of mind
of just
knowing that you got to
tell him to fuck off. Why don't you just fuck off? Just take some poison and fuck off.
And then we get to the point of the matter, right? Tyrion wants Jaime to be his champion. He kind of says it sideways, right? He's like,
yeah.
you know, I made it. Don't give up me just yet. He's like, I made it through one challenge, you know, one challenge already.
And you weren't there.
And you weren't there. And Jamie's like, well, I'm not going to be there this time either because I can't fight worth a damn with my left hand.
Yep. And the way he asked him, too, and the way he's like, wouldn't it be great just to see the look on father's face?
That's right. I was like, maybe you should be the champion.
With one
anyways, stroke,
it cuts both of us down. Wouldn't it be great just to see the look on Tywin's face?
He wouldn't let Tywin probably would not let it play out that way.
No, I don't think so either.
There's no fucking way in hell.
Nope. But I love the fact that
it was a nice thought.
You see the way he was smiling at Jaime. I'm pretty sure that wasn't necessarily a joke or like, oh, that would be nice. It's like more like
would you be willing to
this offer's on the table.
But no. So Bronn hasn't been around, I guess, but that's his second choice.
This is where we find out who the champion is,
though. Who Cersei's champion is.
Oh, yeah.
Which we discussed at the end of our last episode, where we were talking about the preview, which this next scene was also on the preview, and it deals with the mountain, right?
Yep.
So the mountain is out there, I don't know.
Disemboweled.
It's just having fun, it looks like, because I wouldn't call it practice.
No, I have no idea what that
is. He's practicing slaughtering. It takes some real practice to be able to destroy numerous unarmed civilians.
Lots of practice.
Yeah, lots of practice. And that's what it looks like. They're taking prisoners or something, and he's just cutting them down, man.
Yep.
It's like, how sharp is my sword? Let's see if it will disembowel you. We see Cersei arrives, and she walks up, and he immediately is just like, who am I going to have to fight? What's interesting about the scene is I know that the dude that they cast was a big guy, but the way they kind of film it, I think they're doing some Lord of the Rings trickery here. You know how they did with Gandalf and Frodo, where it makes him look impossibly larger. And
yeah.
That's kind of what they did. It looks like that's kind of what they did with Cersei and the mountain. Because I'm pretty sure the dude's not like 8 foot tall in real life.
Probably not. That dude is pretty much a space marine.
It's rare to be able to find really tall dudes that are also built like brick shit houses. I think WWE has a monopoly on all those dudes.
Somebody mentioned to me, and I don't know if this is true, this is just hearsay, but this guy had apparently almost made it into the NFL.
I don't know any of this guy's background. Because you see, for the Faceless Men, we're what they call unsullied, and we haven't read any of the books. And if you start researching shit, then you're going to get spoiled.
Well, I'm sure this guy, you probably just look in his background.
Well, I made true. Yeah, it's just, I try not to research.
This is just hearsay. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I would believe it.
I could believe it too. I mean, he's just a big dude. But just, you know, for the record, I don't do any research because I don't want to be spoiled. And it's not that I have something against being spoiled, because I don't mind knowing what's going to happen in a story.
But that kills our speculation. That's like half
it
the fun.
It does kill our speculation.
That's like half
so
the fun.
So if I did that, it would definitely, you know, take away the integrity of my speculation, which I think is, I'm sure the listeners listen to my half-baked theories about what the hell's going to happen. They laugh their ass off. So we move from the King's Landing to the Riverlands, where Sandor and Arya are, I guess, scrounging for supplies. They come across a dude next to his burnout home. He's got a gut wound. So it looks like, you know, he's got
some time in dying.
A long, painful death ahead of him. Which, of course, spurs the discussion about whether or not the guy should end his suffering. And there's some interesting debate here.
I don't think I caught all of that. I might have gotten up in the middle of that discussion. I can't believe it.
You got up in the middle of Game of Thrones?
Apparently, yeah.
What?
I think I had to. I think there's something. I can't remember that full discussion.
Okay, so the discussion starts out with,
I can't. I forget the life of me. I remember the seeing
like,
it.
The Hound is like, basically, you know, you should do something about this. To the guy, he's like, you need to do something about this. And he's like, yeah. He's like,
You need to. I remember Arya saying, you need to. Why are you outdoors?
That's how it started, right?
Yeah, I tried to crawl on my back to my.
Yeah, why are you out here? And it's like,
Crawling back to my house, but it was already burnt down.
And the Hound's like, who did this to you? And the guy's like, I gave up asking who a long time ago. So, obviously, the whole Riverlands is basically a lawless frontier where people are just pillaging and raping.
Isn't it in Lannister hands? So it's pretty much...
Well, I think the Lannisters...
Spoils of war
kind
of thing.
The Lannisters did it themselves, but I think at this point, then it's just everyone's for themselves. So it really is just a lawless... Because, you know, no one's in control here. The Tullys have been cowed back into their...
I thought they were murdered.
Not all of them were murdered.
Not all of them.
The Blackfish is still around, right?
Oh, yeah, somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard from him in a while.
Nope. So, yeah, so that's a good question. Where's the Blackfish? Where's Osha? And where's Rickon? We'll probably find out next season, or maybe in one of these three remaining episodes.
Or we can just count them all as dead.
They've never given us a clue that Osha and Rickon's dead.
Correct. But I'm just saying. Maybe.
I don't think the Blackfish is dead either. So, yeah, it starts out that, and then Sandor's looking, he's like, wow, you know, that wound is not going to go away. He's like, maybe you should think about...
Not getting better. I hope you have some self-agenda.
Maybe you start thinking about that. You know, alluding to the fact that maybe he should take his own life. And then there's a little bit of nihilism. There's like a whole conversation on nihilism.
Yeah, this is the
Arya's
part
a little
remember.
Bit nihilistic.
I don't remember this part.
Arya's like, you know, maybe you should... Basically, it's better than nothing, right? And then the guy's like, well, maybe nothing is worse. She's saying that if you ease your suffering, then it's better than not easing, you know, than nothing.
Than living in pain.
It's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like an aside comment. She wasn't really talking about the entity of nothing, or oblivion in this case. But he's like, well, you know, maybe there's nothing worse than oblivion. And she's like, well, that's impossible. Nothing is better than worse than nothing. It's just nothing. And then they start talking about kind of like the way things used to be. You give me, I give you. It's fair and it's balanced, but there's no balance anymore. Yep. It was just take. And then he asked for some water. And Sandor's, you know, he's like, dying is thirsty work.
That is very true. Dying is very thirsty work.
So Sandor gives him a water skin, and then after he's done drinking, he takes a knife and finishes him. Can't tell if the guy was thanking him as he died, or was like, damn, that's not really, I'd just rather sit here as long as I could.
You're a dick.
All of a sudden, he gets a surprise biting. There's some dude on his back. Is like we walked into The Walking Dead or something. Some biter jumps up.
Yeah, who the hell's biting? Come on.
Desperate men. That's who.
So he was going to just start eating him before he...
Well, he didn't have a weapon. So that was the only thing he could do, I guess. Distract him while the other guy ran him through with a sword.
Why don't you just start with the sword? That guy would have less broken neck if he started with the sword.
Yeah, instead of... Yeah, you're right. He should have just come up and stabbed him with a sword.
I'm just saying, like, they clearly didn't know he's there.
I agree. I guess the other guy just pulled a Leroy Jenkins. He went off half-cocked without the rest of his party. And they fucking failed.
You never split the party.
Especially not against Sandor. The first thing he discovers is that he's got 100 gold or 100 silver stags on his head. He's like, well, I guess that's what you get for telling the king to fuck off. And he's like, well, the king's dead. And he's like, oh.
The 100 silvers for killing some Lannister men.
For being a traitor, I think, more or less.
Yeah. Arya recognizes him,
that's right. So when they were being, after they were captured, this guy said he was going to
rape. He's standing there with a sword, though. He's just standing, he's got a sword.
He's afraid. He knows that if he gets that close to Sandor, he's going to die. The only way they could have defeated him is by surprise. And that advantage is gone.
I'm just saying.
I don't know why he's not running. They gambled it away.
Why isn't he just running?
I don't know why he's not running. So Arya recognizes him, and then Sandor's like, is he on your list? And she's like, he can't be, because I don't know his name. the guy just plays right into it. Sandor's like, what's your name?
Sorry, if somebody just says, is he on your list? And then she's like, nope, I don't know his name. Why would you just give them your name to be put on the list?
So Arya gets his name. She's like, thank you. And then runs him right through with
needle. Yep, right to the heart, it looks like.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was a center mass for sure. Bam. Yep.
She's pretty quick.
And then Sandor's like, now you're learning. But this brings up an interesting topic to discuss with the nihilism.
Is it better to live in pain or to just end it?
Well, that's one thing. If you had what is considered a wound that you cannot recover to, that you know is going to be a long, painful death.
Terminal illness? Should you include that in that?
Or a terminal illness. Would you consider suicide or not?
I think that's a personal decision.
It is a personal decision. What would your personal decision be?
Nope. Depend. Well, to me, it would depend. Like,
First of all,
you can't really know that until you're in that situation.
I don't know. It's like.
Then you have every possibility to consider, and it's just like.
It would depend on the specific situation. For instance, in this situation where you have a gut wound, I don't know how deep that thing is. Yeah, it's been known to kill people, but is there a. Here's the question. Is there a chance that I could survive, overcome the odds? If there's a 100% terminal rate on something, then I might consider suicide. But if there's even the slimmest chance of surviving it, then I am taking my fucking chances.
Yeah, that's why it's a very much a personal decision. Yeah. And it depends on, I'm sure there's a lot of factors, family and all that.
You talk about modern day, so family, how much are you going to cost your family? Like in medical costs and stuff. Certainly other things factor in, but in this particular situation in medieval world where it's like I have a gut wound, but I'm breathing right now, I think I'd take my chances. Kind of like the old guy did. He's like, yeah, I know I should probably kill myself to save myself the suffering, but we're going to see how this plays out.
I kind of agree with that. Yeah. We'll just see how this goes.
Right. That's what I would do.
I mean, he's pretty much, those gut wounds are really bad. You're pretty much going to die, but it's going to be slow and painful, so.
But I'll take my chances. Who knows? The seven gods may shine on me today. I don't know. Especially in a world where you have, where you believe in mysticism, where you believe in divine intervention and stuff like that, then, yeah, I'd be even more happy to take the chance.
Resurrection is not off the table.
That's right, it's not.
Dondarrion?
Beric Dondarrion.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If if you knew you could be resurrected, I think I'd just get it over with and kill myself so I could be resurrected.
We don't know what the rules are.
I don't know what the rules are. So when you're resurrected, do all of your wounds go away? Because they'd have to, otherwise you'd have to, like, have permanent resurrection on.
Yeah, well, you got that, and then you got, you know, how long is it, how long can you resurrect somebody after their death? Yeah,
what's the time?
Yeah, all these other factors.
What's the expiration date on corpses?
Yeah, let's give it two more days. I'll survive as long as I can.
Well,
buy some time.
So everybody we've seen die from the previous season, except for, I think, you know, people who obviously lose their heads or bones, I think, are...
Yeah, Ned, I feel like...
Ned can't be resurrected.
I feel like beheading is probably a good stop to that.
I mean, who can we bring back? Well, Rob may be too far gone, because he's now got a wolf head attached to his body. But his wife, his mom, hell, any of the guys that we don't like that's died that we cheered for, Joffrey... Wow, he could be resurrected.
I don't think anybody's dumb enough to do that.
This whole world is full of dumb motherfuckers.
I think Cersei, if she's even, I don't even think Cersei would resurrect his
you
ass.
You don't think so?
I don't think she would spend all the money she had to resurrect him. I don't think she would.
That's an interesting debate.
She even admitted he was a monster.
She did admit she was a monster. He was a monster, but she also loved him. I think Cersei would probably, if she knew that resurrection was a possibility, she'd probably do something. So that's an interesting thought right there. So who has died recently that we could bring back, except for the people we already mentioned?
I can't think of...
Plenty of Starks died, so those could be brought back.
Not that I like. There's a lot of people that died, but I don't really care for most of them, so...
I think anybody gets shoved out of Moondoors and go Kersplat after 1,000 feet...
Yeah, I don't think they're going to make it.
Yeah, they're not going to make it. There's not enough left of their shit...
Nope.
I think
even, or at least in the show, didn't after Beric's battle with Sandor, wasn't he getting stitched up, like sewn back together?
I don't know.
I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that. I'm pretty sure showed him, like, getting stitched back together.
So it's like a Frankenstein process?
Well, I mean, like, yeah, he might have been healed after that, but it was like...
Oh. Yeah. Well, anyways, so after that little bout of what can or cannot happen... In the world of Westeros, we go to Castle Black, and we see Snow and company is returning. Rangers are returning. Sam is glad to see him, but Alistair is not.
Yeah, that dude. Well, he sent him out to die.
Well, he did. I think he's a little bit disappointed. Right?
Yeah, very disappointed. I think they only lost. They lost like five brothers. I think is what they said.
Yeah, five, but one of them wasn't really a brother, so he doesn't count.
Yeah, next.
John, I guess on their way back, they noticed that Jon Snow noticed that Mance was very close. Their encampment was very close to the wall.
I think...
So what does Jon recommend doing, though?
Sealing that passage, which was a good idea.
Yeah, so he wants to basically blow up the passage, fill it with rubble, flood it so it freezes.
And then this is a good point. He mentions giants.
Yeah.
He mentions giants. Was that in this season?
No. Yeah. Yeah, Alistair's like, no, and he's like, have you ever seen a giant? It's like, I have. And Alistair's like, well, that's four... It's like four...
Did you see
4 inches or 4 feet of cold rolled steel?
Yeah, something like that.
And John's like, it doesn't matter.
I think this is a foreshadowing that they're about to spend a lot of money on the CGI. I've seen a lot of memes around it. Have you seen a giant? No. And there was a bunch of memes around just like, oh, well, we're about to blow our CGI budget.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think that we're going to see giants. And whenever the assault is, it'll probably either be the penultimate episode, which would be episode 9, or it'll be the finale. Without looking maybe at episode titles, I'm not for sure. But yeah, we're going to see giants. They're going to attack the wall. Castle Black. They're going to get through the gates. And we also have Tormund Giantsbane, right? And the Cannibal Thins, who's out there with the rest of the wildlings, including Ygritte. They're all on the south side of the wall, so we're going to see basically a pincer maneuver where the Night's Watch is stuck between two fronts.
And I think most of what I see from the intro, isn't it very... Castle Black's not nearly as protected from the south side.
No, it's not protected from the south side. And here's something interesting. This was actually... I believe it was a part of the background information in one of the season Blu-rays, special feature stuff. So in the past, someone from the Night's Watch like became a king. It was like, fuck you guys, I'm not just defending, I'm going to be the king. I don't want to get too much into spoilery stuff, because if you want to watch that or read about it, you can do that on your own. But it's also related to the White Walker that we saw with the baby. My memory on the special features is a little bit hazy. So, after they revolted, or, you know, did his own king crap, the rest of the Seven Kingdoms thereafter decided that cannot have defenses to the facing southward or some stuff like that. So that, because their goal was to protect from the north, not from the south.
Yep.
So you're right. I think the defenses pointing south are way weaker because, you know, they're on the south side of the wall and they use the wall mostly as...
Yep. That's like the north
end. As the bulwark of their defenses, right?
Yeah.
Which is why they sent a small team. I think that's why they sent a small team. One, so they wouldn't be recognized, and two, because it won't take much.
Yeah.
And after the giant thing, Alistair actually... So he's like... Well, do you take care of the...
Basically asked him, are you a builder?
Yeah, are you a builder? You're an expert? He's like, no. He's like, so he asked the first builder what his opinion was. What do you think? He eventually said no, they shouldn't do
that. There was a nice long pause. Like, he's like,
Yeah, I think he was basically forced to follow Alistair's suggestion, right? Because I think the builder would have been like, fuck yeah, let's seal those damn things up. So there's a lot of people who agreed with Jon Snow in the crowd, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we don't have enough people to defend this. You know, stuff like that. But Alistair, I don't know.
He definitely downplays the fact that the threat of Mance. Like, well,
Is he downplaying the threat of Mance because he doesn't believe in the threat or because he just wants to put himself in opposition to Jon Snow?
I think a little bit of both. Because, I mean, both. It's...
One feeds the other.
You can't be self-serving and then be like, man, I really want to just get rid of our fortifications so I can die just to spite this dick.
But after Yiwig, who hesitates and eventually caves, said no, we shouldn't do that to the tunnel, then we see Jon Snow and Sam straddled with shitty watch hours.
Very, very shitty. Basically until Mance arrives.
Yep.
Which I'm guessing will probably be soon.
You know, because since Jon Snow has so much secret knowledge, you know, since he's so well informed about the wildlings, then he's going to be taking, you know, the midnight hour, basically, on watch. We go back to King's Landing, and we see Bronn finally comes to Tyrion 2 days late, and he's wearing some nice fucking clothes. Some
very
man.
Fancy clothes.
Very lordly. Why is he dressed up like this, though?
So it seems that Cersei has made some arrangements. That's some right. Wedding arrangements.
It's very convoluted, right? So first he's being wed to the second daughter of some noble who has a castle. And Tyrion tries to inform him. He's like, well, you know that, you know, she's the youngest, and the oldest is actually going to inherit everything when so-and-so dies. And Bronn's like, yeah, but, you know, these young maidens, they die all the time, you know, break their necks falling from horses and stuff like that. Well, that's pretty morbid.
Something's going to be arranged.
Right, so it seems like Cersei has promised... You know, something will happen to the eldest, and then they'll inherit the castle.
Or Bronn's got his own plans.
Or Bronn has his own designs. That's right.
This is pretty interesting, because I believe one of my book reader friends told me that Bronn actually testifies against Tyrion.
But we didn't see that.
Correct.
The testimonies are over, correct?
Yeah.
All right. So
that's why I brought it
up. They kind of strung along. Well, I think I like it this way better, because it kind of...
Well, yeah, you don't have suspense. 125 people testifying. Like, you can't do that. Like, all these people, they're like, oh, wait. Well, all these people hate Tyrion. No,
I think it's this critical moment between Tyrion. This critical moment between Bronn and Tyrion, I think, is better than just having him testify against Tyrion.
Agreed.
We already had one person betray him at trial.
This gives a little bit more character depth.
Or rather than 1.5.
Because then you give Bronn the chance to reveal his motives and more. And like,
yeah, and this doesn't seem as dirty to me because, you know, first of all, you had Varys who kind of, I wouldn't call that betrayal because I wouldn't expect Varys to do anything else. But Shay's betrayal...
Yeah.
Was big, and that would just overshadow Bronn testifying against him. This way we see another perspective where, you know, it's like Bronn's not wrong, man.
He's a mercenary. He said...
Well, that's not even it, because I think if Bronn thought he could... I think if Bronn thought that even he had a 90% chance or an 80% chance against the Mountain, he'd probably fight for Tyrion.
Didn't you hear what he said?
Well, yeah, but the guy promises. Is freakishly big.
Well, he said, yeah, not just that, but he said, you know, if I thought... You could pay me. If I actually thought you could pay me, like...
That's right, yeah, because he's like...
I gotta be alive to spend the money, too.
You said that if anybody... conspired against you, you'd double it. And he's like, but, you know, you don't have any... And Tyrion's like, well, I don't have any castles. He's like, well, you know, why would I do it? He's like, because we're friends. He's like... I mean, he also says, you know, well, when's the last time you stuck your neck out for me?
And he's absolutely right.
He is absolutely right. But I think more importantly, here's what it boils down to. Bronn is pretty sure he can't take them out. Bronn's good.
There was a very serious moment there where he's like, I don't
know. You know,
think...
it's like, he'd be, you know, we'd both be dead, and what would be the good of that?
Yep.
And I would not ask a friend to go up against the Mountain. I just, you know, it's like, no, you're going to die, dude. That ain't worth it. Just go, you know, kind of how he sent Pod off. You know, it's, and I think that they have mutual, they still respect each other and like each other.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't seem that. They shook.
Tyrion's like, I guess I'm just going to have to kill the mountain myself. They'll sing songs about it. And Bronn, you know, I think Bronn's almost tearing up. He's like, well, I hope they sing those songs when he's leaving.
Yeah.
Which is right. You know, I think he makes a good point. He might win against the mountain, but it's very unlikely he would, because, like you said, the mountain is freakishly big and freakishly strong. And he's faster than a guy that his size should be.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
I can maybe able to wear him out and tire him out, but then what? So
I don't blame Bronn. I still like Bronn. I think he took advantage of the situation.
What is it Tyrion said there? He said something along the lines of, you are a cold-hearted bastard sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's like,
that's why
but
I
that's,
like you.
Yeah, that's the reason I like you.
Like, he started getting all mopey, right? He's like, well, I'm sorry, man. He's like, why? Don't be. That's, you know, I liked you because you were a cold-hearted bastard. And then, you know, they shook hands and... That's when Tyrion's like, I guess I'm just going to have to beat the mountain myself. If that would happen, which we know it doesn't, but if that did happen, I think that would be... We'd have to have some kind of comedic death of the mountain, where, you know, it's like, basically...
Tyrion stepping between his feet just to avoid him.
You know, the mountain slips on the proverbial banana peel, and then Tyrion takes advantage of it and he's dead. Kind of like an anticlimactic death for the mountain. We go from the dungeon to Meereen, and we see Daario has snuck in through Dany's window. So she comes back to her room. He's there, and she's like, how'd you get past the guards? And he's like, well, you know, they were guarding the door, but you don't have guards at the window.
He makes a good point, but that's pretty... I'm pretty sure it's pretty high up, because I believe she's in that pyramid, isn't she?
Yeah, she's in the ziggurat, you want to call it. He's here to employ her to...
He brought flowers
that he had to swim to an island
for. I don't know how much of that I believe.
He's
so hard
to be romantic, which she doesn't... Maybe she does give a shit.
She likes to wear him around. She likes to give him the cold shoulder and then,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, she's playing hard to get, right? It's the classic hard to get. But he's employing her to let him do what he does best. And the things he does best is kill people and get with the ladies. And she's like, okay, well, let's do what you do best. And he's like, okay. And then she's like, take off your clothes. And he's like, okay.
Well, I think the line that did it was, you know, there are plenty of women here. And he's like, well, there's only one I want.
you think that's what did it?
I'm guessing.
Sealed the deal?
I don't know. She's been ordering him around like that for a while. So
I have an issue with this scene, with the outcome of the scene. I can't quite put a finger on it, but I want to say it's out of character.
I'm having a full issue of just her behavior towards him in general.
Yeah?
Like the whole playing hard to get and coy and...
Well, I wouldn't mind if it wasn't really hard to get and she's just, you know, trying to be an ass to him.
That's kind of...
I can understand that.
That's kind of how it came across to me.
But now it's like, oh, well, take off your clothes. And it's kind of like, what? We spend all this time, like... We leave Meereen and Dany getting it on with...
I don't know. Yeah, that's interesting. I can't, like, I don't know if I like that character behavior. Like, I don't know how much that serves to actually further that character.
Yeah, I don't know what
whatever
it does.
Budding romance interest it is between her and Daario.
Yeah, it's lackluster. The whole scene was lackluster. I would have enjoyed it more if she was like, yes, go kill the butcher of Slaver Bay. And then, you know, we got a cool fight scene.
Nope, this is kill all of the masters.
So instead, we go to Sel and Mel at Dragonstone. So Selyse stumbles in on Melisandre while she's taking a bath. And Melisandre ushers her in. And they start to have a discussion about lies. And about how jokes... So she tells a joke. Melisandre tells a joke. And...
Yeah, all jokes are lies.
Yeah, well, Selyse, first of all, doesn't have a sense of humor. And that leads into... Oh, Melisandre's like, that's because, you know, you don't like lies. And jokes are lies. And... Of course, Selyse is like, well, shouldn't we stay away from lies? And then Melisandre schools her on, like, no, because lies can be a powerful tool. And she goes across about how, you know, like, all these freaking potions and magical devices up here are lies. All to make men take notice of the Lord of Light.
And lead them to the truth.
Lead them to the truth. So, you know, sounds very religious to me. So, you hook them on lies to get them to the truth. Which is, I don't know. What is the truth? That the Lord of Light's a dick. That's what it sounds like to me, man.
I just come back to this a moment. I'm like, this is more than anything, stuff like that is just like, I don't think she has anything to do with Lord of Light. I don't think she has anything to do with
Lord of
Light.
I think she could have all sorts of things to do with the Lord of Light, but maybe the Lord of Light shouldn't have that title.
Oh, you think he's someone else entirely?
No, I'm just thinking maybe he takes on a fanciful title and he's just really a dick. I mean, okay, look at Christian's God.
I'm saying that I think she doesn't have anything to do with religion. I think she's a witch or something.
Oh, I think that she has plenty to do with religion.
Oh, you're saying.
It fits the model for religion as I know it.
Yeah, that's true. But I have two predictions around this. One, that she either turns out not to be anything to do, like any kind of priestess. Or two, she's a priestess to a god who is not actually anything good.
So like, maybe she's the god...
Lord of Light, my ass. Like, Lord of Darkness would be a better title for the dude.
Or the Red God, right?
Yeah. Basically, the faceless men. Yeah.
Well, the faceless men worship the god of death in all his forms.
Yeah.
Is it the same guy? The Red God is the god of
death. The Heart of Fire and the god of flame and shadow.
Okay, so he's the Lord of Light, but he's not the Lord of Light as in Lord of Goodness. He's the Lord of Light as in...
Lord of Fire.
He has a good propaganda machine, let's say that. Or at least this particular priestess has a good... is good at propaganda.
It says here he's very widely worshipped in Essos, but he's almost completely unheard of in Westeros.
Yes, that's right. So in Westeros, you have the old gods, which were mostly supplanted by the new gods, and then you have the Lord of Light coming over from Essos. That's why the Faceless Men are kind of based in Braavos. That's why they do the whole Red God thing.
Yep.
So, and then we go from lies to lust. Maybe we get the whole seven sins in here, maybe. And we see Melisandre kind of Selyse checking out Melisandre, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because she's jealous or because she herself is lustful.
I think there's some second thoughts and jealousy going on there.
I agree, because it's like Melisandre brings up the point the flesh needs what it needs or something like that.
Well, she already knew about the union between her husband and Melisandre.
Right. Well, that's because she says, I thank the Lord of Light that you come here and, you know, gave my husband what he needed. And it's almost like it's almost like a rote.
It's almost like she's trying to convince herself.
Yes, it is like she's trying to convince herself. But then we find out, really, the meat of this conversation tells us what?
That Selyse has come to ask that her daughter not go with them.
That's right, because she thinks, basically, she's an embarrassment. She doesn't want to be embarrassed by her.
Yep.
But Melisandre says, no, Shireen needs to come with us because Lord of Light has plans for her. And you know what that tells me? The plan on sacrifice.
Yep.
So, how do you think that's going to play out?
I think that Selyse is going to let it happen. I think this will turn Stannis.
You think it will turn Stannis?
I
think someone's going to stand up for it, but it's not going to be Stannis, and it's not going to be Selyse.
It'll definitely be Davos, definitely.
Yes, Davos. So, I think that we've been on a long road here of severing Davos from Stannis. This event will do it, because Stannis will go through with it. He will want to sacrifice his daughter to get the throne. That's the kind of man he is now. He's all about the throne. But I think Davos...
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with that. Especially the way he seems to be...
So Davos will rescue her.
Portrayed here. Because he very much, like, he doesn't seem to care. He doesn't... They haven't shown him visiting his daughter that much.
Yeah, it's like the one time he got upset, right?
Yeah, they haven't really established that he really cares.
When they're at the dinner table, he got upset.
Yep.
And then maybe he got upset a couple times last season. But I think at this point, he'd be willing to go through with it. But you're right, I think Davos is going to be the one that prevents it from happening.
Agreed.
And I don't know what the fallout of
or maybe he gets silenced and isn't, and it ends up separating him anyway.
I think Shireen has a bigger role to play in the Game of Thrones.
I agree. Definitely agree with that.
Then we come back to Meereen, and Jorah has found out that Daario has been with Dany.
You see Daario doing, is it normally called the Walk of Shame?
Well, for him it's not a Walk of Shame. It's a Walk of Conquest, I believe. Jorah's like the most,
he's firmly in the friend zone.
Yeah, firmly in the friend zone. Dany has ordered Daario and the Second Sons to go, so he gets to do both things that he does best. He gets to fuck Dany, and now he gets to go to Yunkai and kill all the masters. Execute them all.
Yep.
But Jorah convinces her to change her mind how?
By showing her that those actions are the same that the masters currently portray, basically. That by not showing them mercy, you are showing that you're doing the exact same thing there. You become them, basically.
That's right. He says, he's like, so the masters treat men like beasts. But by executing the masters like that, you are also treating men like beasts. You're treating the masters like beasts.
You're basically devaluing human life, basically.
Yes. And it's very Nietzsche. So we had some nihilism earlier. Now we get some very Nietzsche-esque stuff.
This one very like, full philosophical episode,
yeah,
I think.
You know, it kind of goes back to Nietzsche where he says, battle not with monsters, lest ye become a monster. That's kind of what Jorah is saying here. And he also makes a very valid point. Jorah himself would not be here if Ned Stark had done to him what Danny wants to do at the Masters. Because Jorah, the whole reason he ended up being leveraged as a spy...
is because he was a slaver.
I think he sold criminals, right?
Captured criminals and sold them as slaves.
He sold criminals into slavery. That's not just like rounding up innocent people and selling them to slavery.
Maybe not be innocent people, that's still slavery.
It is slavery. But I wouldn't go so far. He has not earned the title slaver.
not in your book, but definitely my book. He definitely... I consider that if you're selling someone into slavery, because you capture them and you put them in slavery. Right.
Technically, but the people that he was selling in slavery, I could give a shit less.
That depends on what criminals. They did.
Rapists and murderers.
They send them to the Night's Watch. That's the Night's Watch prerogative.
Yeah, but the Night's Watch doesn't pay you money for it. So he ends up changing her mind, and she just agrees to send that one guy, Hizadar Zolorak. I can't pronounce his name. They pronounce it so fast in the episode. But Lorak, they send Lorak back as an ambassador to young Kai to explain to them what happened to all the masters in Meereen. And give them the opportunity. If you don't, you can either live the way I want you to live, or you can go back to doing the same old shit, and that's what's going to happen to
straighten
you.
Straighten up, fly right, or die.
That's right. That's right. And then, so she tells Jorah, hey, go before Dario leaves, you need to go tell him I changed my mind. And then she's like, no. Tell him you changed my mind, which of course strokes Jorah's ego.
Kind of maybe digs in a little bit at Dario, too.
Makes Jorah feel not so bad for not being the one in bed with Danny, I guess. I think that's the purpose of that comment.
I agree.
Yeah. We come back across the narrow sea to the Riverlands, and damn, that's a nasty bite. It really does look like some Walking Dead. They had some guest Walking Dead makeup artists on the Game of Thrones, and Sandor's cleaning his bite wound. That looks nasty.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, you got all those bacteria and germs in the mouth. If you want a biohazard thing, you know, that's something that probably needs to be cleaned.
I think I've tried to bite someone before, but I never, like, was able to put such a mark on anybody.
I don't know. I can't say I have that experience. I'm just saying, though, if left untreated, I'm pretty sure the fastest kind of wound would probably be a bite mark.
Yeah, there is a bunch of bacteria and shit in your mouth. And then we get Sandor sharing his origin story with Arya. So, you know, he points out, he's like, you know, so you said your brother made that sword for you, right? He's like, my brother gave me this. And he points to the side of his face, it's all burnt up. And Arya's like, well, what happened? He's like, he thought I stole a toy, but I didn't steal it, I was just playing with it. And this is a very human moment for Sandor. I was just playing with it, man. I can't believe, you know, what he did. And he held my face to the fire. And then my dad protected him.
Yep.
You know, it's like, and you know, you think you're alone. And maybe you don't have it as bad as you think.
Yep. This how isolated you have to be from your family if they're willing to let your attempted murder go.
Well, and I think, you know, it gives Arya a clue into how he's become the way he is. Damn, what an awful road that put him on. And then he had to be linked up with Joffrey, the asshole. Mad King the Two. So I think this scene, Sandor gained some points with Arya. I don't know if it's enough to bump him off her list.
Nope, I don't think so.
I wonder if the eventual outcome is that...
I wonder if this isn't...
There's two roads here. Arya could actually be the person that kills Sandor.
Do you think it's going to be, do you think that this is going to advance to the point where it's a mercy killing? Like they did earlier in the show.
Ooh.
I wonder if that wasn't some foreshadowing.
Oh, that could be. That Sandor is mortally wounded, and she basically does him a favor by offing him, and at the same time crossing him off her list.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Jesse.
That's my vote. That's my vote of what's going to happen. I have no idea. But...
Maybe Brienne is the one who mortally wounds him.
I don't know. I wonder if isn't, because gangrene's nothing to shake us. I wonder if this isn't the case.
Oh, man, Sandor can't die from gangrene. I'm just saying. That's the most awful way to send him out.
Red Wedding, that's all I've got to say to that.
Well, I mean, it's like, Sandor needs to die, he needs to succumb to glorious battle wounds, man. It can't be gangrene.
I don't know. that's what I'm assuming is going to happen.
I could see that happening, just, you know, it'd be like, wow, that sucked. That'd be just...
Because I feel like their story's not advancing.
Holy shit, that would suck.
I just don't feel like...
It's going to advance once they arrive in the Vale. That's when things are going to get serious. We just need them to get there now.
So you think it's going to come to a head at the Eyrie? Like,
I think so.
Brienne and Pod are going to meet Sandor and Arya.
They're all going to converge at the same point. Especially, and there's going to be a point where the Sansa storyline, the Arya storyline, and the Brienne. So it's the Stark storyline, right?
Yeah.
Or Stark South of the Wall storyline. They're all going to converge in the Vale.
I wonder what's going to happen at that
point.
It'll
be interesting. I could be totally wrong, too.
I bet Peter would have the Hound killed. Now that I think about it more, that whole scene with the dying dude and the whole mercy killing thing, I think that is what's going to happen. I can see...
Well, I definitely know it's probably definitely a foreshadow. We'll see another mercy killing some other time, for sure.
I think it'll be Sandor's
mercy killing. That's a good prediction.
I'm going to say within probably the next... Within this season, like real soon, probably within the next episode or two, we'll probably see Sandor die.
Wow, that's a big prediction, Jesse. I don't disagree. I'll be sad when I see Sandor die.
I'll probably be sad as well. I'm going to say that I'm pretty sure that it'll be Arya doing the mercy killing, because it seems like she's softening towards him. So
Yeah, because if she really wanted to get at him, she'd leave him with a gut wound, right?
Yeah.
Because it'd be long and painful. So we go elsewhere in the Riverlands?
Yeah, you got a point there. She may just leave him. Maybe that's her. Maybe that's marking him off her list.
Nah, I bet she would do a mercy killing for Sandor. Yeah. For sure. Pod and Brienne are at a tavern on the King's Road. Go inside. Brienne's talking about how they've been sleeping in ditches. And, you know, it's all right if we can treat ourselves to a feather bed and a hot meal, especially one that's not cooked by Pod.
Yep. Setting rabbits on fire.
Of course, she does make the point, don't expect some silk underclothes because, you know, I'm not Tyrion. But then we find out, holy shit, it's Hot Pie. It's the tavern where Hot Pie's at.
Is that his name?
I've not known him by any other name than Hot Pie.
So, I don't remember any names for that kid.
Yeah, so it's one of Arya's former companions, you know, him, Gendry, and Arya. And he loves talking about food.
He explained the gravy. You can't give up on the gravy.
That's right. So not very many people can make it something this good without these special...
He's very enthusiastic about his food.
But Brienne doesn't really give a damn. In fact, it's kind of like, go somewhere else, dude.
We're trying to have a lunch.
Boy. Yeah.
And she comes out, and I think he started asking questions about what they're doing here.
Yeah.
After he realized how... droning on for a while.
Right, because he calls her a knight, and she's like, I'm not a knight. Brienne starts out saying that she's searching for Sansa Stark. And Hot Pie's like, Stark? I don't know any Starks. Obviously giving himself away.
Yeah.
And Brienne kind of presses it. He's like, well, you know, I swore an oath to Lady Stark to find... Well,
didn't he say something about, like, hating the Starks?
No, he said he's like, I hear they're a bunch of traitors.
Oh, yeah.
You know, kind of covering his, you know, it's like, well, I wouldn't associate with a Stark, they're traitors. And then they go outside and Pod kind of chides Brienne. He's like, hey, you can't just, you know, this place is full of Lannister men. You can't just go around saying that you're working for Lady Stark and trying to find the Sansa girl. No, that's bad news.
I think they're in Lannister territory, aren't they?
Well, it's not like Casterly Rock, but yeah, this is the Riverlands, so it's now...
They're definitely Lannister soldiers all the way around. Why is she just, like, spouting that off in a random tavern?
There's definitely Lannister spies.
Everywhere.
Yeah. But then Hot Pie comes out with some kind of baked good and interrupts them. You know, he's like, well, you seem like a decent person. He's like, I don't know Sansa, but I know Arya. And this, of course, is like, whoa, you do? And where is she? And he's like, well, I don't really know, but...
This is where she was headed.
Well, I know who she was with last. That's Sandor, right?
And he was taking her to the Eyrie.
Mm-hmm. And so now, Brienne now has a clue, which will also take her to the Eyrie. Hot on Sandor. And
I believe I called this. I said she would probably end up at the Eyrie. Following some clues.
Well, I called that they were going to... Well, I'm still calling that eventually Sandor Arya will meet up with Pod and Brienne. And it looks like it's going to happen in the Vale.
I don't think so. I don't think they'll ever cross. I think
they will. I think it's way more interesting if both the Stark children are found by Brienne.
I don't want to see Arya's story end like that. I mean, obviously, that would probably continue on for a while. But I don't want her story to go in that direction.
Well, I don't want it to languish on the road under as someone's hostage.
Neither do I. I want to see her become an assassin. Just throwing that out there. I want to see her go to Braavos.
Well, I don't know if she's going to make Braavos this season.
So that would disappoint me if she was like, oh, now we're with Brienne. And
anyway, so Hot Pie gives her a baked dire wolf, you know, the Stark emblem. But it's like, so Pod finally proves he's worth, right? He is the one that basically puts all the pieces together. I don't think Hot Pie knew where they were going. Hot Pie didn't know, he just knew that he was with Sandor. Pod puts it together, saying that...
Well, he told him about the ransom, didn't he?
Yeah, but he didn't say where they were heading. He didn't know that.
I thought he said something about her aunt.
No, that's Pod. Okay. Pod puts all the pieces together because Tyrion made sure he knew who married who and who hated who. So the most likely place to ransom Arya would be Lysa at the Vale. Lysa Arryn, I guess, is her name until now, most recently. Because she hates the Lannisters, and she's also Catelyn's sister. And it's Pod who puts the pieces together, not Hot Pie. Hot Pie just saw her with Sandor.
Yeah.
But Pod proves his worth. And then Brian asks him, how sure are you? He's like, well, not completely. But you see, that's when they go down that right fork, right? So yep. That right fork takes them to the Veil.
Yep. This is the interesting part, because there was a part in there where Pod was busy chiding her for having, you know, given away their mission. Then that whole thing with Hot Pie happens.
And Brian's like, you were saying?
Loved that moment.
Yeah. But I still agree with Pod, though. You just can't go spouting that off. But the difference is, Brienne is experienced enough to spot someone who might be who might have information to be willing to part with it. Because it was basically his whole body language. It's like, yeah, I know a Stark, but I'm not going to say it. And so that's why she gave him information.
And we go back to King's Landing, and Tyrion is busy leaning up against the wall, seeing he has a new visitor.
What's the new visitor?
Oberon!
Yes, Oberon comes here, and they begin talking about Cersei's visit, right? So Oberon sits down, and he's talking about how Cersei came to visit him, where he was pretty sure she came to visit him to influence his decision on the trial.
Yeah, but with words about her daughter.
Yeah, it was about her daughter, but it seemed she didn't come out and say it, but it was really about Tyrion's trial. And Tyrion says something funny and true. Making honest feelings do dishonest work is one of her many gifts. But then Oberyn drops an information bomb on, a historical information bomb on Tyrion.
I've met you before.
Yeah, he's like, you know, I've met you before. And he's like, I don't remember. I'm sure Tyrion's thinking, where was I drunk at that you met me?
Yeah.
But Oberyn met Tyrion when he was just a baby. His father had brought him and, you know, I guess his brother or whatever, or maybe his sister, to Casterly Rock. And on the whole ship ride there, they heard about how the Lannisters had some demon baby. With a tail and red eyes and claws. And then the whole time there at Casterly Rock, they kept begging Cersei, show us the imp. And, you know, it was like, okay. They strung him along, and finally...
Well, he even tells Tyrion beforehand, and you were
the biggest disappointment.
Yeah. That kind of shocks Tyrion.
Tyrion's like, wow, you're just really a dick, Oberyn.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about how, beyond the crappy accents, beyond the crappy weather, beyond the crappy food, Tyrion was the biggest disappointment. They came there to see this demon baby, but when Cersei and Jaime took him to the nursery and pulled back the blankets, it was just a what?
Just a baby.
Just a baby. Yeah, sure, his head was a little bit big, and your arms were a little bit small, but you were just a baby. And he told Cersei that. It's just a baby, Cersei. Why is all this rumor about? And then, like, damn, Cersei's a cunt, because he's like, and then she pinched your dick until I thought it was going to fall off, until Jaime made her stop.
And you remember what her answer was to why she thought he was such a demon?
Because it killed her mom. That's the same reason Tywin doesn't like him.
Yep.
And she was hoping, because everybody kept saying, well, you know, he's deformed and he's not going to make it. Not he's going to die soon. And that's exactly what Cersei said. You know, it doesn't matter because he's going to die soon. But he didn't. He survived. And he survived again and again and again. And that's what pisses Cersei off. That's why we are at this point now.
Yep.
Since he was born, she wanted him to die.
Yep.
But then Oberyn drops another bomb on Tyrion, right?
Before that, he mentions something. He mentions that...
this is the perfect place for justice.
Yep.
He's come here for justice. Tyrion disagrees. This is, if you came for justice, this is the wrong... Yeah,
Cersei always gets what she wants in the end. I'm just going to be, like, murdered.
Yeah. Yeah, if you came here for justice, you came to the wrong place. But Oberyn sees it differently. He's like, no, this is the perfect place.
All my enemies are
here. All the enemies are here. By defeating the mountain, he can piss them all off and get his revenge for his sister.
Yep. But I like that moment when he stood up and, I will be your champion.
Yeah, it was all dramatic, right? He stands up, walks towards the door, then comes back, grabs the torch. It's like, I'm going to be your champion. I will be your champion. And Tyrion's like, he's wordless. He's speechless. He gasped. In fact, you know, I had the same reaction, even though I knew that's what he was there for.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, he's going to be the champion. Bronn's gone. Jaime's gone. It's going to be Oberyn, which we predicted, right?
Yeah. It's like, that's his only... Because, I mean, if anyone else were to go up against the mountain and manage to kill the mountain...
It wouldn't be as awesome.
Well, not only that, but that would kill, like, Oberon, that would defeat Oberon's Oberon's many goals. Somebody would have accomplished his goals.
And I can't see Oberon being the kind
of, I can't see Oberon be the kind of person who just lays down and takes that. Yeah.
Can't pass up that opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's his chance to fight him one-on-one, no armies.
But yeah, I think Tyrion almost cried. He's like, I will be your champion. So, next episode, folks.
That was a really powerful speech and moment.
Yeah. And
not just the champion, but like
pretty good too.
Not just the champion thing, but the whole story.
Yeah. The background. The background was perfect. You know, I usually knock like a bunch of exposition, but this was delivered perfectly.
Yep.
I'm not one for informational dumps. I'm more about, you know, show, don't tell. This was a little bit of telling, but I think it was told perfectly. The dialogue was perfect.
It had a purpose, too.
Yes. Then we go to the final scene of the episode. At the Eyrie, in the Vale. Sansa finds herself in an outside garden, right? And it's snowing. You know, at first I thought maybe she found a godswood, but no. Yeah, it's just an outside garden. It's snowing. Snowing reminds her, the snow reminds her of home, I think. Yep. Which is why...
Let me mention something else earlier. Somebody else mentioned this. I don't know if I heard it right, or they actually said it. Winter Hell instead of Winterfell.
That is what I thought,
I'm pretty sure I've heard that several times within this season.
It was Hot Pie.
Yeah.
Hot Pie said...
But I'm pretty sure I've heard other people say that.
The Starks, they're from Winter Hell, right? Yeah. I was not for sure either. I picked up on that, but I wasn't for sure if that's exactly what it said.
Did Bronn say something like that? Like north?
I'm not for sure. That's the first time I remember hearing.
For north, because when Tyrion promised him, you know, part of the north for
well, all I heard Tyrion. Bronn say is that, you know, it's cold up there. So, no thank you. And you don't have the north yet. Could, woulds, shoulds. I have a bride now. You know, that's what he said.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like immediately I thought, do you want to build a snowman? But no, we're going to build Winter Hell. Out of snow. So a snow fortress.
What a great name for that place.
I do want to give props to whoever the metalsmith was. Did you see the metal gates?
Yeah.
They kind of had some perspective in them.
Yep.
So it looked like you were looking down tunnels. Well, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then in comes Robin. What was the first thing you thought when Robin arrived?
Oh, shit.
First thing I thought is, wow, all that hard work is going to be destroyed. I thought he'd just fucking stomp on it, just because he's Robin. But this is actually some of the most human we've seen Robin, like, or normal. This is the most...
The most childlike, the most... Yeah.
But this is the most normal we've seen. You know, he's kind of having a conversation, and then he goes to put a moon door in something, the tower, and fucking breaks the whole thing off. Sansa gets upset, and then because Sansa's upset, Robin's upset, and Robin goes and throws a temper tantrum and starts... stomping the hell out of Winter Hell.
They're both children. I mean,
they
that
are
was,
both children.
That was both temper tantrums on both their parts.
And Sansa just fucking backhands him, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's well deserved.
Well deserved backhand. But I'm just saying, the whole thing where she got super upset over the Moondor thing. You ruined it.
Yeah, that is very childlike. Finally, man, Sansa takes action. This is the first time we've ever seen her take action, I think.
Yeah.
Bam! In your face, motherfucker!
And she's like, oh, crap.
Shut up, Robin!
Should not have done that.
Reminds me of the meme. The Batman meme! Of course, Robin goes off and screams and cry, which leads us to think, oh, shit, what happens when Lysa finds out? But Baelish witnesses it. He's like, no, you shouldn't have. His mother should.
A long time ago. She should have done that.
Sansa's talking about how, you know, she'll never see Winterfell again. And Baelish's like, well, there's a long time between now and never. And then we see the moment that we saw in the preview clip from last week, where it's like, given the opportunity, what do we do to those who hurt the ones we love?
And that was in response to Sansa's question, why did you kill Joffrey?
Yeah, why'd you kill Joffrey? He's talking about his love for her mother. And of course, it gets all creepy when... He's like, you're more beautiful than she ever was. And then kisses her. The focus changes.
That weird uncle vibe sort of thing.
That's creepy uncle vibe. And then the focus changes. We see Lysa's actually watching the whole thing transpire. Ooh. But I think we're actually seeing Peter's long game here. He sees, within Sansa, he sees Catelyn, his lost love, right?
Yeah. I see that. And a key to the north. I think that's more of appealing to him right now than...
Holy shit, I just had an aneurysm thinking about stuff. Okay, I'll get back to it at the end of a recap of the scene. So, after they kiss, we see Lysa sees it, and then we see Lysa and Sansa at the moon door, which we were wondering if it was the moon door that we saw on the preview clip. This confirms it.
Yep.
And then here comes the crazy. Lysa thinks she's going to get in trouble for slapping Robin, but no.
You mean Sansa?
What'd I say? Lysa? So, Sansa thinks she's going to get in trouble from Lysa for slapping Robin, but no. Lysa saw the kiss, and so she goes fucking nuts. It's like, he's mine! He's mine!
As you expect crazy people to do.
So, loved him all this time. You know, her mom was a bitch, and she's a bitch, and now I'm going to fucking introduce you to Moondor, basically is what happened, right?
Yep.
But then, Baelish comes in and kind of puts a stop to it, calms her down. It's like, look, I will get rid of her right now. Just say the word. And he walks up to her.
I'm like, I knew this was coming. Oh, the moment he was like approaching, I'm like, oh, crap. You're about to be thrown out that door. You gotta taste your medicine.
Because then he's like, because I've only loved one woman.
That's like, I'm like, that's like, not her. Mean,
yeah,
no. Nope.
Like, we just heard who the hell he loved, and it wasn't Lysa. Only one, my entire life. Your sister. And then,
yep, shove.
Through the moon door she goes.
That's a
great way to end the episode.
That is such a fucking slap in the face. Oh, by the way, I've only loved one person. And it was your sister.
Yeah. Later, bitch. The first point I want to bring up is, so we know that he had John Arryn at the beginning poisoned through the blame, suspicion towards the Lannisters, right?
Yep.
Of course, the Lannisters probably would have killed him anyways, given time.
Yeah.
Because he knew shit, because that's what they ended up doing to Ned, for the same information he uncovered. He killed Joffrey. What if he planned the assassination on Bran?
I don't think so.
Well, do you remember that dagger? He's the one who told Catelyn where the dagger came from. Here's my second thought. Speaking of resurrection, we know it can happen. Baelish has lots of resources. Baelish loves Catelyn like no one else.
Oh.
So, now this is where
Where's her body?
This is where I want to discuss the preview for next week. Or, actually, in 2 weeks, right? So we skip a week. We won't get our Game of Thrones fixed next week. It'll be the week after. So on the next episode, we see a preview. They have a preview for the next episode. One, we see Ramsay. The first thing we see is Ramsay sending Theon Greyjoy, in quotation marks, to get Moat Cailin, right? He's like, bring me Moat Cailin. And then we see Baelish is on trial. And Sansa is saying, Baelish has told many lies, I have to tell the truth. But we don't know what she's going to say.
I think she'll lie for him.
Here's why. He is going to tell her that he can return her mother. If you help me survive the trial, I will resurrect your mother. And that is why Sansa lies for him.
I don't know.
Am I throwing it way off base here?
Am I reaching? I think you're reaching. No, I agree that there's probably something. I believe he promised. I don't know. I think he might have promised her something.
Promised her something.
And I'm not.
Her mother's life.
That is interesting. I don't know if he would be responsible for that. The really interesting thing is that is a possibility. Like, we have resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's off the table.
He wants everything, right?
Yeah.
Well, that would be including Catelyn.
I think he wants Sansa.
Well, okay. Could be. We also see Tormund and the Finns hit Molestown. Oh, no! What's going to happen to Jenny? Because we see Jenny. There's a cutscene with Jenny, right?
Or yeah,
there is.
Gilly. There is a scene where she is fending. It looks like she's fending off Finns.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It was Gilly. So what's going to happen to Gilly? She going to get et?
Yeah.
She could be roasted over pit. But, oh, shit. The best clip.
Well, the next part of that scene is Sam crying and...
He's just crying because he's been informed that the Finns hit Molestown.
Oh, yeah.
After that, though, we see Oberyn facing off against the mountain in a big gladiator-style tournament ring thing. We see his sister. He's like, you're going to fight that? And we see more camera action where the mountain is, like, way fucking bigger than Oberyn. Oberyn's not short. I can't tell exactly what it is. Is that a spear or is that
I'm actually replaying that right now to check, and I'm pretty sure I think it's a spear.
Is it a spear?
Yeah, I think it's a spear.
Spear would be a good choice. It'd give him extra reach.
Yeah, and the
because
hole.
That fucking sword the mountain carries, that big claymore, is as long as a spear.
I don't know. The thing's moving way too fast. I can't get it frame by frame.
But that looks spectacular. Something tells me that's going to be one awesome epic battle.
Yeah, I really look forward to watching that duel.
So, the question is, who's going to win? Is it going to be the Viper?
Oh, I'm definitely saying the Viper. I can't see Tyrion.
I am siding with the Viper.
Yeah, I can't see that. Not
the mountain is not... Interesting, he's a plot device. He's not a character, he's a plot device. And so I can't see the plot device winning over Oberyn.
There isn't enough history there. I can't see Tyrion dying yet. I don't think his path is fulfilled.
No, Tyrion's definitely... Well, I mean, regardless of what happens, this is going to give Tyrion his chance to get the hell out. Regardless of how the tournament plays out,
agreed.
He's going to escape. Regardless. Because, I think it's going to be an escape no matter what. Because even if Oberyn wins, Cersei's not going to let him escape.
No.
Or, you know, not going to let him off the hook. So he's going to have to flee regardless.
Yeah.
Win or lose.
Well, he's going to be executed if he loses. So I think they would be closely under guard if you know, that kind of thing happens.
All right. Well, I think that does it for this episode of the Faces Men podcast covering HBO's Game of Thrones television series. Remember, you can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes. You can catch us at facebook.com/facelessmencast. You can find us on Twitter @facelessmencast. You can contact us via Gmail, facelessmencast@gmail.com. And you can catch us on Google+. Just search for a Faceless Men podcast. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Jesse. Valor Magulis.